Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. In today's episode, we speak with the CEO of Relay, Julien. Relay is based out of Switzerland and has proven to be one of Europe's most successful Bitcoin-focused startups. Julien takes us through this journey and their current offerings tailored to individuals, businesses, and private clients. We hope you enjoy, and as a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. We have the pleasure of welcoming today, I'm your co-host, Israel Munoz, joined with co-host Lynn Bairstow, and we have today on the podcast, Julien Linegar from Relay. Julien, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Hey guys, thank you for having me.
Now we appreciate it. So today we'll focus the conversation on of course, your business, Relay, Julien, which has grown to be one of Europe's easiest investing app with over 100,000 users. And we'll get into a little more of what that entails, what you're working on and how you got there. But before, we'd like to start with a little bit about you, Julien, so that the listeners get to know, you know, who's behind the Relay and how you got introduced to Bitcoin. So if you can share a little of your backstory and how you got to the starting point of Relay, that'd be great.
Sure. Yeah, more than happy to. So I'm Julien, 31 years old. I was born and raised in Switzerland, actually in a quite small countryside village with like around maybe 1,000 people. That's where I grew up and did kindergarten. And then I moved to a bit of a bigger, not a city. It was just still a village, like 4,500 people maybe. But there already there were more people than cows, so that was a difference. And then just moved to Biel, where I still live now. It's a smaller city with maybe 50,000 inhabitants, and did my kind of high school and gymnasium, as we call it here, college, and then moved to Bern, where I did university. Bern is the capital city of Switzerland, but still rather small, probably compared to US standards, maybe 150,000 people, maybe 200,000. And then moved to Zurich. I never really moved to Zurich, but like our business or where I did my first professional experiences was in banking and management consulting. This led me to Zurich, where then we also founded our business, and we still have our offices and headquarters here. So basically, yeah, studied psychology and business administration. I did some time in the army as well, more than a year. I'm a lieutenant in the army here in Switzerland, but now, of course, focusing only on Bitcoin and Relay and growing the business. We started 4 years ago, went to market, and as you said, we're now one of the biggest, probably the biggest Bitcoin-only on-ramp in Europe. With more than 100,000 users and more than 400 million in dollars, not dollars, but euros and Swiss francs, like fiat money, that have been invested into Bitcoin through us and right into self-custody. And I got introduced to Bitcoin roughly 9 years ago in 2015 by a friend who was very techie. I was not techie, and I'm still not techie at all. But this friend introduced me while we were playing some video games together, introduced me to Bitcoin and to the concept of like digital assets and cryptocurrencies. And I found it fascinating, fell down the rabbit hole rather slowly. Took me like 2 years to really get up to speed with all things crypto. And then I had my ICO and altcoin phase, etc. And then took me another 2 years to really, you know, understand the Bitcoin only mindset, and then, you know, founded the company, and here we are.
And I guess out of curiosity, Julien, in that journey, you said you studied business, finance, and you slowly began getting more interested in Bitcoin. I mean, what was it in particular that drew you to Bitcoin? Was it that a realization that the current financial system had its flaws and was broken, and then you started, you know, kind of seeing what Bitcoin is and what it offers, or what particular aspects of Bitcoin drew your attention in the beginning?
So at the very beginning, I mean, all of these things came step by step, of course. And I just understood, the more I understood about Bitcoin, the more powerful I thought it is as a concept, and the more revolutionary, like it will change everything. But at the beginning, what was really cool to me is it was like the freedom aspect. You know, if you have a libertarian kind of mindset and you find this thing that is an asset, kind of like a stock, but also kind of like gold and kind of like cash, you know, but some kind of asset that has value and that changes every second, 24/7. Like there's a market for it, there's a price. You can transfer it, you know, 24/7 with a smartphone over the internet. You don't need anything but the internet. You don't need to trust any third party, you know, don't need banks to transact it. You don't need central banks or governments to issue it. It's just there. It's just a network like the internet, which is a network for information. This is a network for value, that, you know, peer-to-peer, decentralized, open source, all that kind of stuff. And I thought this was amazingly powerful and really empowering and cool, to have basically money that lives on the internet that you can hold yourself, transact with anyone, buy and sell 24/7 without asking for anyone's permission. That was really what hooked me. And then from there on, you know, as it goes, you go deeper and deeper to rabbit hole, you learn more about the financial system, about money and how basically it is broken, especially for the use case of saving on the long term. And then that's what really created this drive to build a company around it, because we really wanted to educate more people around this topic and give easy access to Bitcoin, which we view as the best savings technology that has ever been invented.
Now, Julian, there is a little bit of a leap between understanding and appreciating Bitcoin and wanting to start a company. So not many people, I think, of the millions, the few millions of people that have adopted Bitcoin, there aren't many that have decided to start a company. What was that journey like, and how did you have a pain point that you were solving, or you just saw an opportunity being, you know, somebody looking at business opportunities, or what was your entrepreneurial background prior to starting Relay?
A great point. These were two streams, like the Bitcoin stream and the entrepreneurial stream, that really developed very independently in my case. 2015, when I discovered Bitcoin, I was hooked by it. I was fascinated. I was passionate. Again, it went down the rabbit hole, etc. But I was still probably my first or second year of uni and still mainly focused on psychology, less in business. Business was my minor, just as like a backup in case I don't find a job in kind of psychology, which then was the case. But that wasn't, at this time, it was not like entrepreneurial yet, really. I didn't really know about entrepreneurship, startup, etc. I didn't have a clue what I want to do in my life anyway. And so this only then, this stream basically started later, only in my master's, probably first, second year of my master's, where I had a class, a small seminar called Being an Entrepreneur. And in Swiss universities, especially in the one I attended, the University of Bern, which is the capital and like close to government and close to big corporations. Usually what people do, like 9 out of 10 or probably more, of the alumni there, you know, they basically enter a big corporation or work for the government. And I definitely knew I don't want to do that. And so this entrepreneurship class really opened a lot of doors for me, and I was like very fascinated by that. And I thought, okay, this is the first time I kind of have passion for something and could really imagine working as an entrepreneur, like starting a business, building a team around a vision, raising funds, building a cool technology, finding a great solution to a problem that people are excited to use and are willing to pay for, etc. So this concept was really nice for me, and that started kind of this rabbit hole. Led me also to the Silicon Valley, where I did an exchange semester for a couple of months, and then like really got immersed into the entrepreneurship and startup culture around San Francisco and Silicon Valley. And interestingly, that was 2017, second half of 2017, where we had the first huge bull run, right? Bitcoin went from 1K to 20K, thousands of ICOs were happening and, you know, popping up everywhere. I attended launch parties in San Francisco about whatever Bitcoin or already there were like meme coins and utility tokens, etc. It was flashy, it was fascinating, it was fun. It made a lot of money, lost a lot of money, but really tried everything, learned a lot. And that's basically where the two paths, I guess, merged or converged. And so I came back in 2018, then finished my master's studies, decided not to go for a consulting career, but for an entrepreneurship career. And I was looking, you know, for market opportunities, gaps that were existing, problems that people had that were not solved. And because I was kind of the Bitcoin guy, right, in my crew, in my family, my colleagues, my friends, all of them, when kind of the price moved, they came to me and like asked, okay, you're the Bitcoin guy, right? How can I buy Bitcoin now? How can I invest $100 easily? How can I set up a savings plan, like $50 a week into Bitcoin? How can I buy other altcoins, etc.? And I always had to tell them, look, it's not that easy. I can show you how it works, but it's kind of, it takes some time to understand, etc. And so I observed that 9 out of 10 of these people stopped somewhere in the process because it's too complicated for them. They just wanted to try it out, you know, but it's too complicated for them. And then that led me to the realization that if we can build an app that everyone can download and with a couple of clicks in a couple of minutes can get onboarded and buy and sell Bitcoin, send and receive, hold it in a non-custodial way, you know, have his the backup phrase, etc., and all in one app. And you don't need to use like an exchange and the wallet and all this kind of stuff. You just have one app that makes it super easy. You can also set up a savings plan and like forget about it. You're just saving a little bit of money every week or every month into Bitcoin. That would be powerful. And that's basically where it all started in 2019. And then we worked on it as a hobby first, and it became a project, and then it became a company. And we launched the first product or the first app in both app stores in summer 2020.
Julian, you said earlier that you're not techie, but you started a tech company. So yeah, you have your partner, Adam. Is he the kind of technical part of it, which I think is a great teamwork where you have somebody more strategic and somebody technical. But can you talk about how that came to be?
Absolutely.
You have a vision of it? Yeah.
Absolutely. I was an okay student, but I had one class I failed. I had to redo the exam, and there was a business informatics. So really everything that had to do with technology, I was not really good at. I was very interested in tech and what it can do and like the big visions of like these techpreneurs, etc. And I guess from a use case point of view, from product and user experience point of view, I was very interested and maybe have some talents, but like tech, coding, engineering, absolutely not my thing. Like I'm also very bad with numbers, for example, and maths, and like not a computer scientist at all. But yes, as you said, I found Adam, fortunately, who helped me and who kind of shared the vision. That we need to make Bitcoin easier and accessible via a nice mobile app. And he knew how to build mobile apps. He had done it for a living for a couple of years. He had his own company, software development company, where he brought blockchain, different blockchain projects to mobile. So he has built several mobile apps already. He did a PhD in bioinformatics. So he knew a lot about computer science and taught himself a lot of coding, back end and front end, you know, full stack, but mostly then mobile, which is a perfect fit, right? For that was exactly what I needed. I needed a tech counterpart that could build on mobile. And so, yeah, that's how we got to know each other end of 2018, beginning of 2019. We did a hackathon together and it kind of clicked, felt very good working together, etc. And then a year later we went live with the app that he built. Like Adam built the first version of the app within a couple of months all on his own.
Well, I think it's a great story. It just kind of goes to show how you kind of always do need a broad range of perspectives and skill sets, right, to build a company. And it's nice to hear the power of kind of putting yourself out there as well. I mean, some of the details of how you started Relay are quite interesting. You know, I mean, you mentioned going to Silicon Valley, going to a hackathon, and that you're a total non-technologist. But it goes to show how, you know, also initiative and putting yourself out there, being curious can, you know, sometimes lead to some pretty great results.
Exactly. I think you definitely need both. And that's what Adam is telling others all the time, is that other techies, like, usually techies are fascinated by one use case, one technology. They build something, and then in a couple of months, you know, they really go pretty far, but they don't really like to talk to people. They don't really like to talk to potential customers, to potential investors, to, you know, they don't want to put themselves out there. They don't like to go to conferences and present like what they're doing. So what happens then is, after a couple of months, they have a nice technology, but they don't find product market fit, and so they put it in a folder and they start something new, because then they get excited about maybe new technology that came out or like new inflection point that enables something, and then they work on something else. And so a lot of tech is what happens, unfortunately, is that they just keep working on exciting stuff that never really even, you know, gets out there. No one knows about it, and it never, you know, makes it to product market fit. And that's also what he said. If he hadn't met me, he said he would probably still be doing that as a hobby, these small projects and tinkering with technology as a hobby. And he would still probably have his company that was basically building other visions, right? Other people came to him and asked him to build their vision, which he didn't necessarily share. But what happened when we met is that he really shared this vision, and he was happy. He made it his, and then together we were able to build it. So yeah, I'm a big believer of, you know, at least two complementary founders. I mean, complementary on the skills level, but homogeneous or similar on the vision level, right? The vision needs to be the same, and the mission, the principles, the values need to be similar, and the skills and experiences and competencies need to be different. And that's, I think, the magic combination you need to strike. And then you need to strike and like work with each other on the social level. That's then another very hard thing to do sometimes. And that's where also a lot of startups fail, I think, even though they share the right, the same vision, and they're complementary on skills, but then they get into interpersonal conflicts, and then that's what also can kill a company. Fortunately, on all these three levels, we are very we had a very good start, and we're still very good on all of these 4 or 5 years later.
Yeah, and Julian, can you talk to us a little bit about how Relay has grown as a company? Like, do you have distributed employees, or are you and Adam physically in the same place? I think, you know, because of Bitcoin and blockchain, you know, being such a distributed technology, that a lot of the companies we talk to, the whole team is in different locations and work remotely. But I don't know how Relay is set up. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah.
And how you've grown?
Yeah, we're kind of. Absolutely. It's a great question. We're kind of a hybrid, but mostly distributed, mostly remote, because also when we started mid-2020, it was exactly when COVID hit, a couple of months before COVID hit. So actually, we did meet a couple of times, of course, in, you know, beginning of or throughout 2019 and beginning of 2020. But then COVID came, and that's where exactly the hot phase of like, okay, now we're building this, we're getting out an MVP, we put it in front of people, we let people test it out, and we got a lot of feedback on social media, etc. In this hot phase, that was exactly when COVID hit, so we didn't see each other physically for months, for a couple of months. It was like lockdown, so we only were communicating in video calls and Slack, etc. And so that's also kind of how the company foundation then just by definition, we became a distributed company, remote company, virtual company. And so we also set up the whole, all the systems and all the communication practices and the culture, etc. First, just between the two of us, we set it all up 100% remotely, asynchronous communication and all the tools, etc. And then when we raised money and actually built the company and actually started to grow and scale and hire people, then it was just natural that we were looking for talent, not only in Switzerland, but mostly in Europe, but even globally. So now we have close to 30 employees. I think we're like 27, 28, still hiring. So soon we'll be 30 people and 8 are in Switzerland. The rest is mostly in Europe, some even more remote. We have one employee in La Réunion, just close to Mauritius, in a like small island somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean. We have someone in Sri Lanka as well. But yeah, mainly also in European countries, France, Germany, Austria, etc. It did serve us very well. I think also because of the nature of like being a tech, fintech, Bitcoin company, which is these are all global topics. And especially because also the talent pool is much, much bigger. I mean, if we were to hire only in Switzerland, I mean, there's not that much tech talent or other talent. There are 8 million people. It's not a huge country, right? Already, if we open the scope to Europe, we have 400 million people. And then also there's the financial aspect. I mean, Switzerland is pretty similar to San Francisco when it comes to the living costs and the salaries. So we couldn't afford 27, 28 Swiss employees currently. And you just find basically better talent sometimes, or at least equal talent for much lower for a much lower budget in other countries. That's basically how organically we grew to a remote team, but it works very well. I think we have figured out in the last 4 years how to work together very effectively and efficiently. Sometimes I do feel, or I do wish that we would see each other more often. We see each other, the whole team flies in and meets in person twice a year for close to a week. That's great. So every time I leave the city we meet, I wonder what would be possible if we would spend like every day together in the office. But it works very well. And it has pros and cons like everything, but I think it's definitely possible to create a good high performance team in a remote way as well.
Well, thanks for all the context on the team behind Relay and how that team has kind of organically grown, Julian. So maybe we can segue into a little bit more about Relay itself. I know you've somewhat recently expanded other business lines, Relay Private, Relay Business. But before we get into maybe some of those other verticals and, you know, geographically where your users are, maybe before all of that, we can speak a little bit to this most recent development, which seems like a pretty significant, in a way, shift, probably again with its pros and cons, like you just mentioned. But you started out with a strong non-KYC, self-custodial, identity. And now it seems like the regulatory reality of the European market and where you're operating is pushing Relay to the KYC route. So can you speak a little bit to this recent development, Julian, and how you view it impacting your users, you as a business, opportunities and challenges?
Yeah, sure. So it is definitely a very interesting development, basically starting with nothing. Like 4 years ago, we started literally with nothing. We were just two broke guys with a dream and with a passion. And then we went out with this first product. The very first product was basically only a front end to another Swiss broker. So we didn't have the broker side, just literally had a front end React Native mobile app MVP. We went out with this, but we what we thought, what the vision always was to make it super easy for people. And that's also the reason why we chose and we found this legal kind of loophole, if you want, or like niche in Switzerland, in Swiss regulation, that you can basically exchange different types of money. Then it included Bitcoin up to a certain level. So up to 1K a day and 100K per year. You could do this without KYC, right? It was not AML relevant to the regulator back then. And we saw this and wanted to bring it from the physical world where it was being done. Like people have some gold, for example, or euro, and they go to a Swiss bank and they can exchange it to Swiss francs and they don't have to verify themselves. And we saw this in the physical world and we thought, we can do this with Bitcoin in the digital world, in a mobile app. So we didn't even necessarily do it because of the privacy aspects or just the, you know, other aspects that are very close to the Bitcoin core or whatever. We basically did it because of convenience. We wanted to find the easiest way how newcomers can buy Bitcoin. And that seemed to be the easiest way because no one likes to go through the KYC process at the beginning of using an app, even though everyone is used to it. Every fintech app, you know, if you download the Neobank app, first thing you need to do is KYC before you can do anything, right? So people are aware of that, but we thought this would be a great opportunity to make it super easy for people to buy their first 50 or 100 bucks of Bitcoin and experiencing it. So that's why we went live with this first version that was purely focused on small retail investors and was no KYC. And it was Bitcoin only, non-custodial, Swiss made. These are still our three core principles. We don't want to go away. And that's maybe an important distinction to make. Why we now basically have to do KYC for all users, because over the years, the regulatory requirements tightened up, and they are, this is a trend that will move on. So therefore, we now have to do KYC for all the users, but we're still fully non-custodial. So Bitcoin only, non-custodial, and Swiss made, still like at our core for everything we do. But then in the last 4 years, then after we went live, like step by step, we were basically observing how the regulatory the tightening of this new evolving industry. The bigger an industry get, the more regulation is coming, and it's always coming later, right? I mean, Bitcoin was first released or conceived or like made public in 2008 and 2009, and like for 10 years regulators didn't really care. But now that it has become a multi-trillion dollar, like plus $1 trillion dollar asset, regulators start to care, and they take their time, but like step by step they introduce new measures, new requirements, new frameworks that then, you know, also make entrepreneurs change or adapt their business models, their practices. So we did see this coming already quite early, which also led to our strategic decision of, okay, we cannot only be a front end. Like we need to own also the broker side. We cannot only own the wallet side, because the money is actually being made in the exchange between Swiss francs or euro and Bitcoin. So the brokerage part, and basically at the beginning we just earned some commission of this broker, but everything was decided by them. They were the regulated entity. So we saw pretty early, okay, we need to become the regulated entity, the broker. We need to own the user. We need to own the technical and financial and pricing and business model decisions. Otherwise they could just, you know, they could just double the transaction fees. We cannot do anything about it. We just need to so that wouldn't make sense long term. And also we needed to be close to the regulators to see what is possible, what are the limits, and et cetera. So after our seed round, where we raised $2.5 million with our lead investor, Red Alpine, we did clearly focus on, so the next milestone is to become regulated and to build this broker ourselves, which we have done. End of 2021, we were then a regulated broker, which also allowed us to offer for users the ability to do KYC, so that they have higher limits.
As an option
at the beginning, yeah. So still, we onboarded most of the small users in this no KYC limit, up to 1K a day, 100K per year, but many, some and more of them kind of upgraded then to what we call affluent users. So from retail to affluent, they did KYC, it's like 5 minutes, super easy, and then they can invest, you know, several K, whatever, how much, pretty much how much they want. And then that also led to, in 2022 or 23, maybe beginning of 2023, really, we launched Relay Private, which is a service for high net worth individuals. Of course, the onboarding procedures with KYC, AML, proof of funds, etc., are more cumbersome there, and like longer and more effort, etc. But these bigger clients are willing to do that. And there's obviously, the bigger the volume, the more money is to be made for a broker like us. And so we ventured into that area, and eventually then also into the business area. So we also started to onboard business clients that are investing 6 to 7 digits into Bitcoin, putting it on their balance sheet. And there's, again, a more cumbersome and more complex onboarding process involved. But this was all, we could do that because we became regulated brokers. That was a very important strategic decision. And now, step by step, there were more things that kind of the regulators asked us to do, including first, mainly, in the backend transaction monitoring things, fraud detection systems, a lot of reporting data, etc. So for the user, these things were not visible, but for us, it was clear that, like, okay, they are demanding more and more. The audits were becoming longer and, you know, more tedious, etc. So it was clear that there would be changes at one point. And so recently, then our Swiss regulator started asking us to do this because they were new by FINMA, the Swiss financial regulator. There were new communications out there that kind of suggested things get more tight. And our direct regulator, which is an SRO, a self-regulatory organization, so indirectly we are supervised by FINMA, they then started executing on these things. And lately they asked us to do, basically, for our case, they interpreted the law and the communications by FINMA so that, in a way, that we basically need to do KYC for all of our users, because we are offering a non-custodial wallet and the ability for people to transact payment tokens, Bitcoin, which for them makes us a money transmission or a payment service provider, which qualifies to is AML relevant, and so therefore we need to do KYC on all users or drastically change our business, which we didn't want to do. So we thought it's the smaller issue to do KYC with all of our users. And also, what kind of informed this decision is because, of course, we want to expand out of Switzerland. We were already in the last 4 years able to accept EU customers, but we were not able with our Swiss license to actively acquire customers of EU countries. That said, we roughly, I think, 75 or even 80% of our users are EU users. So clearly, like, organically, we grew a lot in these EU countries. So it shows a big potential. That's why we decided to also get licensed in an EU country so we can access actively all the 40-ish EU countries, including Germany, France, Spain, and all, Italy, and all these big countries. And with MiCA, the new regulation that will come up from next year, anyway, this is needed because this reverse solicitation, like accepting customers from EU countries as a Swiss company, is most likely not going to work anymore, at least not on the long run. So pretty much we need this license to be successfully expanding into EU countries in the long run. And there it will be anyway, like full KYC. So from next year on, latest, we would have needed to do full KYC on all these EU users, which are 80% now, will probably be 90, 95% soon as we expand to Europe. So then, you know, the decision was pretty clear. Let's make our life simple and just give in to the Swiss regulators and do KYC for everyone. And it even has some advantages as well, because now we can more closely integrate with the fiat system. So with more banks, with payment service providers, with regulators everywhere, obviously these kind of financial incumbents, they did view the no KYC approach as very risky and very strange. And like, they always had a lot of questions. There were always a lot of blockers. So in a way, it will be positive. In other ways, of course, it is perceived by some users as a negative. So I expect short to midterm, there will be some negative consequences that we need to go through as a company. But every early stage startup has such phases. I believe in the long run, it's going to be beneficial, and it's just a necessary move that we had to do.
Yeah, it brings up an interesting question, because it feels to me like when Relay started, it was really kind of fitting the need of somebody who really just wanted to put $50 or $100 or have an easy on-ramp to it. But as you as a company have evolved, you know, necessarily you expand your market and you see that other, you know, larger entities, high net worth individuals and businesses also have a desire to acquire Bitcoin. And have you found that they... you know, that this is actually helping, you know, the kind of the closer ties or more integration with regulated entities is helping the acquisition of that market? How has the reception been on that side of it?
I think that's a bit too early to say. I can't really, we don't really have data on this yet, because we only just got informed basically about this change maybe 2 weeks ago, and we started to implement this week. So it's too early to say. What we can say is that the more retail users we get, the more private users we also get, because like 80% of our high net worth individuals and business users are coming from this retail pool. And that's where we build our community, our brand, like, you know, all these Twitter and Instagram followers, they follow basically the retail brand, right? All these plus 100,000 active users, they are retail users, and some of them then upgrade to become affluent or even private or business users. We rarely kind of acquire directly, because there the customer acquisition cost would be very, very high. Like that, basically acquiring from our own pool of users that already know and like Relay, it's the customer acquisition cost is very, very low. So if it will have a drastic impact on the size or the speed we can grow this retail pool, then I believe it could have a negative impact, which I don't hope, but we'll need to see. So far, it's just like too early to say whether this will impact our growth in a negative way. What I do also assume, on the other hand, is that as a brand, we will further grow up. And we did a lot, like at the beginning, 4 years ago, our brand was very young, very like cheeky, revolutionary, you know, the pirates. And now we have grown more and more. We have become more mature, more grown up, more kind of stability and professionalism, I think, is associated with our brand, regulation, credibility, etc. And so we become more like a navy, you know, this notion from pirate to navy. And this is maybe another step in that direction that is inevitable, but will also open up more doors again to more of these bigger institutions, bigger customers, high net worth individuals, family offices, just entrepreneurs, etc. Because in the end, it's about finance, and you know, finance, even though you don't really have to trust us with your money because we never custody your Bitcoin, you still want to transact with a trusted, regulated, stable financial partner. And that's also why Swissmade and like the regulation and doing the necessary checks like KYC, AML, proof of funds and all that kind of stuff, even though it's cumbersome, maybe even has a positive impact as well on the long run.
Yeah, that's super interesting because, it feels to me like, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about the demographics of your user, because it feels to me like it's more of a millennial user who, it's maybe their first, kind of savings plan, if you will, or in a fintech. But, when you look at the potential of the shifting of, so many people have been focused on this ETF in the U.S. and capturing, existing pockets of institutional money, but you're really looking at future money and how the demographic will be acquiring their own money, will be inheriting, will be, taking over the legacy assets in the future. So was that part of the plan, or can you talk number one about your demographics and number two, how you see it, your demographic perhaps, coming into more assets as a percentage of global assets in the future?
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly kind of also our thesis, because in the next 10 years, the majority of the money will be in the hands of millennials. And if you look at the studies, you ask any sorts of millennials in every different country, in every different wealth segment, like two out of three say they are very open to Bitcoin, they want to buy Bitcoin in the future, etc. So if you combine these two insights, in the next 10 years, there will be billions of dollars or like trillions of dollars, billions of people and trillions of dollars will flow into Bitcoin, right? Because the millennials are growing up, they will get more control over more money and they will invest part of it into Bitcoin. And so that is our thesis. That's also why we are mainly targeting millennials, as most of the fintechs, because it just makes sense. It's the most attractive user group. It's the biggest user group out there in the market, and it's the one that will become very wealthy in the next years. So we do, and that we have achieved. So we do have mostly, I think, probably 40, if not 50% of our users are millennials, between, what is it, 25 to 30 or yeah, 20, 25 to almost 40, I think, year olds. Then some Gen Z, so the one below actually is also growing quite nicely, and the one above as well, maybe up to 48 or 50 or something. And then the higher the age, the less we appeal to these users. But also Bitcoin, I think it's pretty clear that the older the people, the less they tend to be open and understanding Bitcoin. That's just how it is. But yeah, that's how our demographics look like. Probably roughly 50% are millennials. And it's true that mainly that this was also part of the strategy to be mainly focusing on this age group that will acquire a lot of money and will invest a lot of that into Bitcoin. So if we can appeal to them early, then and build a brand that appeals to them, then long term we will have a good attractive business. But then also the strategy was always to mainly, especially on the communication, marketing, and branding front, to be mainly retail, to focus on retail and grow this retail business, even though it might be less attractive from a financial point of view, to only have that. But then in combination of having these affluent, private, and business segments as well, and to be able to convert a certain percentage of them into the higher value customer segments with this low acquisition cost on the retail side, that was definitely, I think, also a good strategic decision, which is now only starting to play out, because we're only really live with MVPs on these Relay Private and Relay Business segments, but already have in both segments more than 100 clients, and are doing like 10 to 20% of our monthly volume on these. And I think there's still a lot of potential there, up to like probably 50-50 even. And we're only just starting to professionalize these. You know, at the beginning, it was basically one guy that took the call, and then via email collecting all the documents, onboarding documents, and then, okay, please now send 250K to this account, bank account, and give us your address, so we will send you the 12 Bitcoin or whatever. And that's how it worked until quite recently. And even with that crappy first version, we were able to acquire more than 100, probably around 200-ish high net worth individuals, and like maybe 150 businesses. And now we're, of course, professionalizing this. Now that we find product market fit, we're professionalizing this. So the onboarding is much smoother now with like a tech process. And there will be a web app soon for these people. So basically, they don't have to deal with people anymore. They can basically do everything in a self-service way. These two aspects, I think, focusing on millennials and mainly focusing on retail, but then expanding to higher net worth and higher value customers was always part of the game plan.
Well, I mean, Julian, you have some very healthy metrics. I mean, I thanks for sharing. I think it's useful to also get into a little bit of the thought process on what sounds like what's been your product roadmap has been pretty organic, yes, but very thoughtful as well. You're kind of looking ahead into where certain trends are heading. I mean, you're thinking behind the customer acquisition costs in a very smart and, you know, kind of resourceful way. To me, it sounds like two main components from what I'm hearing that have contributed largely to your success are staying focused on the experience you're giving the customers and staying true to your core beliefs, which I believe you mentioned were Swiss made, self-custodial, and I forget the third.
Bitcoin only.
Thank you. Yeah, the obvious one. Anything else that you think has been an important contributor to your success in these first 4 years?
I think the ones you mentioned, definitely, like having a very clear laser focus and not like trying to do everything for everyone, but really try to do one thing very, very specifically for a certain group and then expand from there. That has been very important. And I think building the right team, which sounds very obvious, and every entrepreneur is basically probably telling that, but for me, one of my top priorities is always and has always been recruiting the right people and doing everything we can to have them be productive and stay with us as long as possible. And I think we have done quite a good job, even though we always had and still have limited resources, and other of our competitors have much higher resources and can pay much, much higher salaries, etc. But we have been able to acquire talent that others couldn't, just because, you know, our case is convincing, our brand is big, etc. Not sure what are all the reasons. Also, maybe the culture, just the things we offer, just the focus we give. Like, we're not saving on that. We're just investing a lot of our time and effort and money into getting the right talent. And even though it might in that situation when we hire like a new CFO that is very experienced and very expensive, etc., it might seem like an overkill for a small company, but so far it always had this effect that we grew faster through this, and then a couple of months later it made total sense. So we kind of growing the team maybe a bit ahead of the traction of the business, but it catches up very quickly and always seems to be the right decision. really focus on this great talent, even if it sounds unaffordable or sound like, well, we're still too small, we cannot do this yet, etc. We always try to just have the best talent, also not only in terms of experience, but mostly also in terms of personality and cultural fit. And I think we've really learned to identify who is a good fit and who is not, and which position we need to fill next, and also to say no, focus not only in terms of product, but also in terms of team. I mean, in the end, we are only, you could view it like as we're only 27, 28 people now with, more than 100,000 active users, with more than 400 million invested into Bitcoin, around 30 to 50 million per month, depending on the month, is invested into Bitcoin with us. There's a lot of projects we're working on in terms of product, tech, but also legal compliance, etc. There's a lot we really get done with a relatively small team and with low amount of resources. We only raised around 10 million in these last 4 years, and we're already profitable with that as well, growing profitably. So I think that's all a testament to having attribute a lot of this success to having great people, but few people, and just every employee is like 100% fit. And we also take the necessary steps if at one point we feel that it's not anymore the perfect thing, right?
Julian, I really appreciate that core talent building, and when we're looking at the universe. But I want to get back to another one. You know, Israel was talking about the core tenets of your business, and something that you, Israel, and I'm sure just it comes naturally to us, that Bitcoin only focus. But to many of our listeners, it may not be as clear. And especially as you're growing a company, there must have been some, and raising funds, there must have been some suggestion at some point that you expand into other cryptos or expand the offerings on the platform. How have you retained that focus on Bitcoin only, and why is that so important to you?
Yeah, definitely. That was definitely a challenge of our core principles and our values, for sure, when we were raising funds, and especially when all these DeFi stuff was very hot, or meme coins or whatever. And you see other crypto exchanges making a lot of money with these short-term trends. And we were not. We were just growing steadily our kind of Bitcoin volume, as also the Bitcoin market grew, but it didn't grow as explosively as others. And so it was hard. We had to develop like an argumentation to rationalize why we are Bitcoin only, why it makes business sense to be Bitcoin only. And now I feel like many of the VCs are getting it, and there is an emergence of really Bitcoin only VCs that not only get it, but really focus on only that. And this makes it easier for us to legitimize and explain why we are Bitcoin only. Now it has become less hard. But in like 2021, 22, it was very, very hard to explain why we are not willing to add ETH at least, or a couple of other coins, because there's more volume, there's more money to be made, etc. But also there are a lot of downsides. You kind of lose your focus, you lose your character. We have built a brand and a community around that Bitcoin only narrative, which we would lose, etc. And just long term, we see, like, if you look ahead, maybe not only a couple of quarters, but a couple of years or even decades, it's just pretty clear to us that that everything else becomes quite irrelevant, and Bitcoin will just grow massively and outgrow all of these by orders of magnitude. And so it really makes sense to focus only on that and go deep on that. Deep on Bitcoin, instead of having 100 coins and be like on the surface of them, having one, but really go deep. We were challenged there. We had to say no to money because we were not willing to get rid of our principles, basically, or to compromise our principles and values. And we did that, and we had also tough conversations with investors that were already in previously that did not really only have a Bitcoin only mindset. But it was definitely very good that we stayed true to ourselves. I think that was very important. And every company in the end, you're picking your niche, you're picking your game, and then it's important to be true to that. I mean, because if you just want to do everything, you won't do nothing really. You won't add value really anywhere. If you focus on one thing, you say no to a lot of potential business, but you will be known as exactly, you know, that. And if you dominate a niche, then that is big enough to become potentially a unicorn, then I think that's the way to go. And you can expand later on so many different fields within this niche that you should not like expand early to a lot of different niches, because then you lose your appeal, your character, your focus. And that fortunately we ha has not happened for us. We're happy about it, and now it became easier to raise funds from generalistic VCs that understand the Bitcoin only narrative, or from the various kind of Bitcoin only sources of funding.
Yeah, well, thanks for sharing that, Julian. And I think that thesis will continue to prove successful, prove to be successful as time passes, right? I mean, part of what's so great for that Lynn and I have been able to get a glimpse into is precisely all of these case studies or, success cases, even though it's early. Like yourself, where it's staying true to your values as a company, being focused on the long term, just providing a valuable service or product to the customer, is at the core, and you're just kind of patiently, profitably growing steadily towards that direction, right? So, I mean, to me, that's maybe a great point to be wrapping things up, Lynn. I don't know if you want to add anything else or any other comments before we kind of let Julian go.
Yeah, I guess just the one question I would have is, since we have investors also on the podcast too, is what is your trajectory in terms of fundraising? Are you raising funds I mean, you recently closed a round last year, I think it was. And so, just to kind of give a high level overview of where you stand in your trajectory of being open to new investors, or what that investor profile might look like.
Yeah, totally. So currently we are not actively raising. We have raised, I think, three equity rounds in the last 4 years, these 10 million, and now we're growing profitably. But we always, even though we're not maybe actively kind of fundraising for an equity round, we always make sure to be open to great investors that kind of approach us. And so we always have like options via convertible notes, for example, for people that just really fit into our cap table, that can bring smart money and great network, great advice, etc. We're very open in that regard. So yeah, that's always an option. We did these three rounds. The goal is to reach next milestones, to grow, to start this EU expansion with, like, hopefully by the end of this year, getting this license approval, switching to this KYC approach that is necessary for that, achieving some more product milestones and more traction on the private and business side, so we can really prove our case. And just reach a critical size, and first prove that we can actively, with marketing budget, we can actively acquire users and win market in the EU, mainly focusing on then, once we have the MiCA license, Germany, France, Italy, Spain, these bigger markets around Switzerland. And then basically with that track record, we will go out and raise a big growth round, would be the idea, and then take a lot of this money to expand further and really, spend it actively into customer acquisition and marketing. performance marketing in these EU countries, and then also starting to expand into other jurisdictions, but not very clear when exactly this will happen. Maybe as early as end of this year, where we'll open up and start first conversations with bigger VCs, or then maybe somewhere next year. But definitely we're always open for great investors, also individual investors. We just lately did a convertible with a cool bigger but private like investor, angel investor, that came out of the network of our 25, 30 angel investors we have on the cap table and like six VCs. They're always kind of, we always get approached, and if it's a good fit, then we never say no to smart money at good conditions.
Well, I mean, can't thank you enough, Julian. I think this was a great episode on the core behind what's proving to be one of Europe's most successful Bitcoin-only companies. So, we really appreciate it, and we'll be sure to plug in some of the links into the show notes. I guess, and anything else you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, perfect. Including where can people find you, or will you be at any events coming up anytime soon to connect with you?
Yeah, so I do 2-3 conferences, mainly in Europe, every year. So I've been to the Madeira one, we just talked offline before. Then I was in Prague. I'm always like, Prague is the best European conference in my opinion. And then I will be in October in Lugano, which is the biggest Swiss one and also one of the best European ones. I haven't been in Nashville this year, but maybe I will also be next year in the US, the big US Bitcoin conference. Otherwise, of course, online, my DMs are open on Twitter or X, and also on LinkedIn. And make sure to follow Relay, to follow me. Feel free to drop me a message. I'm looking forward to get feedback or ideas you want to share, or whatever you just want to talk. I'm here. Thank you very much, guys, for the very nice and interesting conversations. I really appreciate it.
We look forward to following your journey with you. So we're sure we'll have you back again, and as things progress, and to follow your journey, because it's a fascinating one. And just can't thank you enough for being a part of Build with Bitcoin.
Thank you, guys.